The Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab number 84 for December 26th, 2006. Greetings, folks. I am Dave Hamilton. I'm here with John Braun. And, you know, John, I was thinking this morning, Braun and Hamilton, why is it that the hosts of this show are named after household appliance brands?
Never really crossed my mind.
Oh, well, it should cross your mind. Did you have a nice Christmas, John?
I got this Black Rock.
Trying to
figure out what it's for.
I'll tell you later. You could use it to heat your house, maybe. Somebody was thinking about you. They wanted to send their warm regards to you for the holiday season.
But no, it's a good holiday. I got lots of loot.
That's good.
Hang out with family and friends and stuff. And
John, I couldn't stop thinking about you at Christmas dinner last night. And no, it's not what you think. For Christmas dinner, we actually ate turducken.
You had one.
Yeah. Yeah, awesome. We had one last night. Yeah, it was good. It was a store-bought pre-made turducken, right? I mean, we didn't go through the whole process of boning the chicken, duck, and the turkey.
No.
Right.
I think you've got to be highly skilled to debone a bird.
Yeah, I guess
and
so.
And not destroy the
infrastructure
there.
That's right. But it, you know, it had all the meat, and then it was stuffed with this cranberry thing, and it was actually really tasty. You know, the flavor of the duck kind of permeates through everything else, and so you get the, you know, it was good. So, but I couldn't stop thinking of you because, of course, it was while we were doing this show that I first learned about the concept of turducken. So, so here we are in the middle of the holiday stretch, right? Christmas and Hanukkah are over. Kwanzaa has just begun. Who knows what else is going on? And then, of course, next weekend we have New Year's Eve for those of you that celebrate the Gregorian calendar, right? And New Year's Day really is what the holiday is, though in this country of excess, New Year's Eve is far more important. Isn't that right, John?
I guess so. Yeah, you gotta wrap up your year end. Got to look at all my finances, see if I got to, unload any stock or anything like that.
Yeah, this is the week to do it. So we had said that we were going to do a little Windows on a Mac thing today for this show. And then Friday, as I was about to prep everything for the show today, Parallels announced a new version and VMware released their public beta. So that's not going to happen today. We're going to do that next week because I've got to go through a little bit more of that. We have tons of your questions in the hopper, though. So that is where we're going today. We're going to start out with one from Robert, and we'll see where it goes from there.
I have a new question for you.
Actually, you know what? That's a different question from Robert, and it's similar questions, I think. So we're gonna play his most recent one.
Hello, this is Robert from the Jersey Shore calling because I've got a problem. I know. Not that problem. I've got a problem with iPhoto. My wife and I have our own digital cameras. We have one G5 computer with two unique profiles. She has her profile, user profile. I have my user profile. However, we would like to be able to share our photos between the iPhoto application without having to log on to the other person's user profile. So what I'm trying to say is I would like to be able to plug in my camera, download my pictures on my user profile, but when she opens her version of iPhoto in her user profile, she'll see the pictures that I just downloaded and put onto the computer. If I put my iPhoto library into some sort of shared folder, and if she does the same, could we reference the same database so we all have our photos in one big photo file? I don't like the way that iPhoto shares photos between multiple computers and I don't even know if I can do that with the multiple users on one computer. But if you could do that, that would be if you could give me some suggestions, that would be a tremendous help. Thank you.
Okay, so you basically answered your own question, Robert. Yes, you can create a shared folder that in which you both kind of point your iPhoto libraries and go from there. The problem comes with the way that OS X by default deals with shared files on the file system. This is actually something that relates to the Geek Challenge, which we will talk about today because we have the answer for the most, at least the active Geek Challenge. And the issue is this. Normally in Unix, if you create a shared folder or if create a folder where you say, you know, people in the members of a certain group can write and read files in this folder. When someone adds a new file to it, the other person can read and write to it. In OS X, it's not set up that way by default. So you have to set up what's called an access control list or edit the access control list on a given directory, whatever this shared directory is, and make it such that any files added to it can be read and written by the users that you want to do that. We're not going to go through all that right here. Excuse me. There are a number of links, one on macOS10hints.com that we'll just put in the show notes that talk about sharing an iPhoto library among multiple users. But that's the trick there. So
this would be going to the when you do a git info on the folder, there is the ownership and permissions section. So I gather it involves fiddling with that.
Yeah, and you could. Excuse me. Boy, it's odd doing a show this early in the morning. And, of course, I ate dairy yesterday, which is the first time I ate dairy in a long time. So I'm all...
You're all mucus.
Yeah, I'm all congested. So, however, you can do that. If let's say you and I have accounts on the same machine, John, and I... dump files into a folder. You can't write to those files by default, but I could go in and like you said, with get info, change the folder and its contents to allow you to write to it. But I'd have to do that every single time if I didn't first set up access control lists on the machine. And then once you do that, then it kind of inherits these permissions all the time with any files that are added to the folder, and it makes life a whole lot simpler. Yeah.
Nice. Now, I've noticed a fun thing with both the iPhoto sharing and iTunes sharing, and I've seen this happen mostly when I travel and you log into wireless networks that are shared in hotels and stuff. Just a note to anybody, if you do enable either photo sharing or music sharing on your machine, but mostly photo sharing, you may want to be aware of whether it's on or off, because I've stumbled across more than one photo library that the person probably didn't intend to share it with the entire hotel or trade show that they were at. So,
it's always there. And remember, unlike with your iTunes library, if you share a photo library, people can actually take copies of your pictures. People on the local network can just, you know, drag pictures right on over. There's no, you know, RIAA to threaten Apple if they allow you to do that. So there they go. You know, it's just your pictures, so no problem. All right. Chad had an interesting question, and we'll see where it goes.
Hey, guys. This is Jed. Thanks for the show. It's great. Emailed in a couple times. But I just wanted to kind of respond to a couple things. One is for the remote control issue, there's a program called Mira, M-I-R-A. I actually don't use it, but I tried it out, and it's pretty good, and it might help that guy with the GarageBand. Secondly, there's this new program called Drive-In, which is really interesting. It's kind of a way to back up DVDs in a very kind of, you know, it's in little cases. So I just thought it was kind of interesting. And then the third question was, I know you guys covered this when Boot Camp came out, but is there any other program that could do a non-destructive partitioning of a hard drive? Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
John, you want to take this one?
Which part? Any part.
The second part. I mean, Mira is what it is, and you know, with
well, yes.
Go.
So the good news is non-destructive format. Now I know there was. I don't have this off the top of my head, but I do know that Apple does have a command line tool that'll do this. But the nice
That's
thing
right.
is that ProSoft makes a wonderful program that I think a few of us on the staff use, and it's called Drive Genius, and it has a non-destructive repartitioning.
Interesting
facility.
Interesting thing about Drive Genius is not only do we use it here on the staff, but it is the software that's used by the Apple stores when you bring your Mac in for the, you know, quote unquote yearly tune-up thing. That's they do a lot of stuff with Drive Genius as well. So just an aside there. Yeah.
Yeah, DVD backups, I don't know if we mentioned this, but I think they recently had a re-ruling on the Digital Millennium Copyright Act.
Yeah.
One of the aspects of it says that you're not allowed to remove things that protect copyrighted works, and they had a re-ruling on certain parts of it because it hampered certain people from doing things like, you know, cryptographic research and, you know, things that I'm involved with. And they had a re-ruling, and from what I recall, they did not say, oh, okay, you know, we think it's reasonable for people to be able to back up their DVDs. From what I recall, they did not.
No, they did not.
Include that revision, which
that's correct.
Is just very disappointing. You know, consumers' rights, where do they go? I don't know.
That's right, yeah. So this show is sponsored by Audio Engine USA, makers of the fine A5 speakers that both John and I use in our home studios here. Fantastic little speakers. It is two separate speakers, so you can spread them out to get a good stereo field. They're basically the size of a Mac Cube each, and they've each got two drivers in them. Really nice wooden boxes covered in either a black or white Lucite, I guess, wrap, or I guess maybe it's not Lucite, I don't know. Some sort of protective plastic, but very attractive. Have a USB port on the top for charging your iPod that you can plug directly in, or you can plug it into your Mac. And as John can attest to, you can take an Airport Express and plug it right into the back of the speakers. There's a AC outlet on the back that'll hang an Airport Express from it, and you can be totally self-contained with one outlet plugged into the wall, and you're good to go. So Audio Engine speakers from AudioEngineUSA.com. Well worth checking out. We'll move on to what Dave has to say here, and not me, but another Dave.
Hi, Dave and John. This is Dave from Columbus. I know I'm probably extremely late on the keyboard shortcuts, but one that I found that has just blew me away was within iPhoto. When you have your small rotate icon down in the bottom left, when you're looking through your photos, you can either set it to either rotate clockwise or rotate counterclockwise, but you can't have both icons down in the bottom. So what you can do is whenever you're viewing a photo and you need to rotate it in the other direction, if you hold down the Alt key, it instantly changes the icon to the whatever you have it, the opposite of whatever you have it set. So let's say you have it set to rotate counterclockwise and you realize you need it to go clockwise, you can hold down the Alt key and that gives you that option. Anyway, something real simple, but keeps you from having to jump up to the menu bar and select it there. Thanks. Great podcast. See ya. Bye.
That's actually a great tip, so thank you, Dave. This also opens up the discussion for exactly what that option key, he called it Alt, presumably he's using a third-party keyboard, but if you've got a Mac keyboard, it is called Option, usually with the little Alt written in as well. Mm-hmm. And it does. It changes the function of a lot of things and probably some things that we take for granted and don't even notice here. But John and I were talking about this before the show, kind of in our prep here. I wind up using Option all the time in various capacities, and so do you. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what it is that you were doing with it, John?
Yeah, I found two things. Well, one, in iPhoto, I noticed that also in addition to the rotate, it also changes the icon that I guess I'll call it album create.
Mm-hmm.
So normally it's a little plus, and I noticed also when you hold down the Alt key, it changes it to the smart playlist creation icon.
And iTunes
so
does the same thing.
So a lot of programs do this. Now I've seen some programs, and I'll classify them as better written and worse written, and I'm not quite sure what's behind it. But for example, I was, you know, futzing around, and I thought, let me go into Eudora and see what happens here. Now, what I'm used to is that what I'm going to call well-written applications is when you have a menu pulled down and you hit the Alt, things will change depending on the state of the Alt key. Now, unfortunately, Eudora does not do that. You have to release, hold down the key, and then you get new options. For example, I found something that I never knew was in here, is that normally there's a check mail in the Eudora file menu. If you hold down Alt, check mail specially, and it gives you like a fine-tuned mail check dialog with all sorts of options. So, you know, if you got some time to kill and you want to go through your application, seriously, yeah. I mean, sometimes, you know, if you want to explore, you hold down Alt and your menu choices may reveal things that you didn't know exist or you had to really, you know, jump through hoops to get at.
Yep.
Which is why they have you hold down that key, I guess.
That's right. Yeah. I wonder if the, because I've noticed it too, where some apps will, just like you said, show you live in the menu. You can hold a menu down and, you know, jump up and down on the option key and watch it change right there live in the menu, whereas others, you have to reload the menu in order to see that. I wonder if that's a Cocoa versus Carbon thing. Because I know I know Eudora is a Carbon app still.
Yes.
So I'm wondering if that's where the line's drawn. But maybe it may have absolutely nothing to do with that. And like you said, John, may just be simply an issue of how they wrote the code. But to me, I mean, menus are one of those things that programmers are just using toolbox calls for. So it seems to me that it would be more of a meta thing than just a, you know, how did you code the menu? Right?
Yep.
Right? I mean, that's kind of my thought.
That sounds reasonable that it's a Cocoa versus Carbon limitation.
Yeah. All right. Well, Peter had something to say on the... We're jumping around a little bit here, John, just in case you're following along at home.
Trying, but then...
Let's see what Peter talks about.
Hey, Dave and John. This is Peter calling from Germany. I have a quick answer to the Australian guy who wanted to control his GarageBand from the next room. And you recommended some... Keyspan, I think, product. There is a different possibility that opens up even more possibilities if you have a Bluetooth-enabled phone. It's a software called Selling Clicker. It's at selling.com, S-A-L-L-I-N-G.com. And for $23.95, you can buy a software that enables, I think, any Bluetooth-enabled device like BlackBerry's Bluetooth-enabled phones and anything to remote control your map. Your Mac, and there's tons of scripts out there to use that with many different applications, and there is one script for GarageBand as well. Well, $23.95 is not cheap, but the coolness factor, if you're doing a presentation and are right across the room when the next slide should appear, and you just pull out your Bluetooth-enabled phone out of your pocket and switch to the next slide, that's well worth it. It's really fun. Plus, you can use it for many, many other programs like iPhoto and DVD player and anything. Well, if you have the Selling Clicker software installed, then you need a script for GarageBand. And that's actually made in Australia. You can find it at www.gourmetcookies.iinet.net.au/garageband.html. And there you can find the script to, well, do whatever you want with GarageBand, like play, stop, fast forward, fast backward, next track, previous track, go back to the start, anything like that, even a save is possible. So that might be the solution for the Australian friend with the soundtrack. So, hey, I hope he stays happy, you stay happy, and have a great time. Bye-bye.
And I, of course, will put that link in the show notes here. I think it's actually already there. So,
and that was awesome. You know, I was overjoyed to hear this.
Were you
now? I have a Bluetooth cell phone, a Motorola V710.
Yep.
With Bluetooth, you know, and I can use the headset. But then I looked on the site for support for my phone, and I looked at the list. I think they say they support 300 devices. I figured, you know, my phone, which at one point was fairly popular, I think
that's right.
And I'm like, you know, this is great. I'm going to look on the list, and it wasn't there.
Is that because it's a Verizon phone with crippled and Bluetooth and all that stuff?
How did you get... So, yeah, so they say go to the forms. So I went to the support forms, searched for V710, and pretty much found a thread saying what you suspected is that they so severely crippled the Bluetooth functionality on the V710, and I don't think that's the only phone. And a lot of it is, as far as I can tell, it's not for my benefit as the consumer. If you want to do anything with the phone, you have to go through their cell network and rake up minutes and pay them money.
That's right.
Like even when I got, you know, the picture, you know, it takes pictures and there's a free up, or so I thought, there's a free website where you can look at the pictures that you took after you upload them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, after my first bill, you know, because I thought, oh, well, the website's free, so no.
Not the time, huh?
Yeah, so fortunately this phone has a TransFlash memory card.
Oh, okay.
Which allows you to do picture and sound transfers without paying Verizon. So a little mini rant against any cell phone company. And I think Verizon's one of the worst.
They're the worst. Well, they're the worst in terms of that, yeah. That's right.
In terms of getting a special version of the phone that removes features that used to be part of the phone. Come on, guys. I mean, how many people are going to take advantage? I mean, I think only the really geeky are going to, you know, be into wanting to talk directly to the phone. You know, how much money are you losing versus the aggravation that you're causing? So,
they do deter a lot of geeks from buying phones through their network because of exactly what you say there. And of course, geeks are the early adopters and the influencers, right? Mm-hmm. It's not hurting them. I mean, they're doing just fine, Verizon is, but still, you'd think they could cater to the people that are going to influence everyone else. And we'd stop ranting about it here, and you'd stop having hesitation when you went to get a new cell phone and say, wait a minute, what was it that those guys said about Verizon? Do I really want one of these? So. Michael wrote in with some sleep issues. He says, I was just listening to Mac Geek Gab 82, and there was a caller that was having trouble with his Mac having kernel panics in relation to the screensaver and sleep modes. I was having some very similar issues with my Dual G4 a while back, and found that it only occurred when I had a particular USB SD card reader plugged in. This happened no matter which USB port the reader was plugged into, the OEM ones or the USB 2.0 PCI card I had installed. The workaround was to simply leave the card reader unplugged unless I was actually transferring photos. I haven't tried it with my new 20-inch iMac Intel iMac yet, but I almost expect a similar issue. This may or may not fix the other listener's issue, but would be worth checking into to see if there's a peripheral that is causing it. Learned a lot from the show and listen every week. Thanks, Michael. So, again, just one of those things to remember when you're troubleshooting stuff, that external devices can cause trouble. And we're going to talk about that actually in a minute here with regards to John's DVD issue, because that gets very interesting.
Yeah, and I've been through this. I actually did have something at the 9-to-5 job, which mm-hmm. specifically involved debugging a USB device descriptor on a device. As it turns out, the device would cause certain PCs, though not all of them, to basically not start if they were plugged in. If you pulled the device out, the machine started up just fine. And it was traced back to a USB descriptor that was not formed properly. Basically, it reports its length, which may not be such a great idea. The problem is the length it reported and the length that it actually was were different.
Yep.
And some PC BIOSes said, huh? And some said, okay, whatever.
Yeah, there you go.
So, yeah, funny with a card reader. Now, there usually is a way, like in this case, to get a firmware update.
Okay.
You know, flash the firmware. So in the case of, you know, this external device, it may have a way to update the firmware, which could solve the problem, assuming it's a USB descriptor. But just want to toss that in because that can get aggravating, that your hardware is, you know, plotting against you.
That's right. All right, well, let's talk about this DVD issue, John, here, because as we found out, yes, it can be a hardware issue, but it can also be a software issue, and Dan pointed this out, and I believe solved your problem, but you're going to tell us, John.
Mm-hmm. Hey, guys, this is Dan in Broken Arrow, Oklahoma. Hey, John, I have had the same problem you had with your DVDs not playing back on your Mac, and turns out I checked my console log, which might be a good place to look, and it mentioned something about Lexar every time I plugged in or every time I inserted a DVD. I thought that was real interesting, and so sure enough, I checked, and I removed some drivers for a Lexar USB key that I'd recently installed, and once I did that, my DVD started playing again. So for some reason, the Lexar drivers were taking over my DVD drive, so it might be something to look into. My email address.
All right, we'll skip that part of it. So that that I think headed you down a path that finally ended in resolution. Is that right, John?
Yes, it did, and I'll give the details very quickly. So I always suspected it was a system level issue because you know, I think some people suggested, you know, turn off DVD player. Maybe it's DVD player, but it would do it before any application. So
yeah, I guess we should revisit the issue. It's obvious to us, but I just realized now we haven't talked about it. What was happening is John would put if he put data DVDs into his computer, they worked fine. But if he put a movie DVD in, it would say this disc is unreadable and basically offer to eject it or do nothing with it. That's correct, right? Those are the symptoms that you were having?
Yeah, and it was a system dialogue saying, I can't mount this disc.
Yeah.
And, what do you want me to do?
And the interesting thing was that it was happening on two of your computers, not just one. And that's what kind of got us scratching our heads. So.
Yeah. I'm like, you know, and I tried, you know, with some coworkers, you know, that their machines were fine because I thought, is it an OS update or what's going on? Or the type of machine, you know.
Sure.
So as it turns out, so the tip that we got was right on the mark and some specifics here. So the application that you do want to run to debug this is in your utilities folder, application utilities, and there's something called console.
I love that. Steve. Yeah.
And the console, and he was right, is that if you dig around in the various logs, a lot of interesting stuff comes up. And in this case, what happened was, you know, so I would look through the logs, and every time I put in a DVD, there would be a pile of stuff about with the word Lexar in it. So he was right. And what I did is I recently got, which I'm very happy with, except for this feature,
right,
a small Lexar 2 gig USB drive. And then I was thinking back, well, you know, did anything weird happen when I, you know, put this device in my machine? And they offer some software that's very nice. I think it's called Secure 2. And one thing that it lets you do is to mount a encrypted file under the file system that you're on, either Windows or Mac. But in the case of the Mac, it says, hey, I got to install a driver in order to let you do this. Can I do that? And I'm like, yeah, sure. Okay.
Sure.
Never thinking that it would come back to haunt me. So I'm looking through the system.log file, and I would see all these calls, the com, Lexar driver, Lexar filter scheme, blah, blah, blah. And then here's what would clued me in, being a software type of guy, is that one of the calls would fail with a status of 1. Now, typically,
okay. Yep.
Depending on how you write software, but a lot of times when everything is great, you return a status of 0.
Got it.
So I'm like, okay, something in the Lexar driver failed.
Mm-hmm.
So what to do about it? Well, the good thing is that it gave me, you know, pretty much a path to a com Lexar driver, Lexar filter scheme.
Yeah.
So I was able to find, now, warning, warning, danger, danger. Do not be very careful with what I'm about to tell you to do here, because this could get you in big trouble and you're going to have a pretty aluminum brick if you do this. What I was
well,
able to
well,
find,
none of what you're going to mess with here could actually mess up hardware, at least in theory, right? It would require an OS reinstall. So yeah,
right. But you could mess up your software.
That's right, in a big way. Yeah.
So what solved the problem was I went into system, so top level system,
yep,
then library, then extensions.
Okay.
And if you look in that folder, you have a whole bunch of KEXT, which I believe is kernel extension.
Yep.
Which are all sorts, and you'll see a lot of things here which clue you in that this is a dangerous place to be. I mean, Apple Mouse and Apple Airport, things that you really want to have there. And I found one called LexarFilterScheme.KEXT. I'm like, huh, that's the same name as the thing that was reported in the log file.
Yep.
Let me drag that out of there, reboot, and see what happens. And lo and behold, drag that out of there, rebooted the machine. I am now playing DVDs like a madman.
All right. So you, because I've messed with this before, and years back, I always remembered people telling me if you mess with anything in the extensions folder, you then need to go one level up to system library and remove extensions.kextcache and extensions.mkext. You didn't have to do any of that in order to get this to happen. Hmm. Okay. All right. Well, that's perhaps that was just someone being overcautious and saying, look, pull the cache out and then obviously reboot, which you had to do as well. And then that would do it. So
And that was definitely responsible, because now if I start up this Secure 2 software that comes with the with the drive, the Secure Vault option is grayed out.
Okay.
So it realizes... Okay. Well, again, well, it also offers to reinstall it for me.
Yeah, I'm like, sure it does, yeah.
No, thanks. So the only thing I could imagine is because it has something to do with disk mounting or you know, USB drive mounting and security. I just can't imagine why they would be intercepting or screwing up the DVD playing. And I think we mentioned before, I was able to use VLC.
Yeah,
that's
right.
Another thing that clued me in that was kind of a software issue.
Yeah, that's
is that
weird,
another
man.
Piece of software worked fine. So there's a weird combination between Mac OS X, this extension, and DVD player that just doesn't work.
Got it.
So,
all right, well.
But boy, that was, that took a little doing. And again, I was crossing my fingers when I dragged this file out of there because, again, the whole system folder is a place you really don't want to be.
No, that's true. Yeah.
Directly mucking about.
That's right. Cool. Well, I'm glad to see that solved. 206-666-GEEK is the number that that everyone calls, except Dan, of course, because he used Skype to Mac Geek Gab to get in touch with us. But 206-666-GEEK, which is 4335. And one last comment before we get to the Geek Challenge here.
Hey, John and Dave. In the latest episode of the podcast, Dave was talking about wanting to be able to modify and or edit his iPod settings while the iPod is not connected to the computer.
Yes.
Episode 83, I just blessed the iPod. Previous versions of iTunes, I believe iTunes 6 or greater, when I personally connected the first generation Shuffle to it, there was an option that you could check that would say, leave this iPod in the source list. I would assume, I can't verify, but I would assume that if you were to connect your iPod to your Mac or PC, launch iTunes if it didn't launch automatically, and then either control or right-click on the iPod itself in the source list, there may or may not be a option to say leave this in the source list. It may also be somewhere in the preferences or settings pane in iTunes 7. But I do remember seeing it for my Shuffle, and I recall having it for a full-sized 20 gigabyte iPod that I would leave connected for the most part, but when I disconnected it would still show up in the source list, even though any songs that were on it that were not on my computer I could not play, but I could just access it as though it were already there. So yeah, that's my little two bits there. Hopefully.
Thank you. As John and I found
a support article though.
Yeah.
On the Apple site.
Okay.
And they even differentiate saying, and it's an iPod Shuffle frequently asked questions. They show a picture of the old one and the new one.
Okay.
And they have an answer to the question saying, yeah, you should select keep this iPod in the source list.
Uh-huh.
Great. Awesome. Okay. So where is I was frantically searching for it, as I think you were.
Yeah, I did. I looked for it all over the place. You know what? Gone. It's not there anymore. iTunes 7. Nixed. Not an option.
Yeah, which is too. I mean, it was behavior that was different from all the other iPods.
Yes.
I'm trying to think of the justification for doing this though, because the Shuffle, I think, and maybe the Nano, I'm not sure, but the Shuffle Gen 1 definitely allowed you to do this on iTunes 6. So why did they get rid of it? I don't think it's an improvement.
I think they should have not gotten rid of it. I think they should add it for all of the iPods. But that's, you know,
yeah,
that's just me. What do I know?
Mm-hmm.
I do know that
you could revert to older iTunes, though I don't know if you'd want to do that.
Yeah, but that's not going to do anything for me. It'll only work with the Shuffle at that point. I want it with everything. I know that on my wife's PowerBook, she plugged in one of the iPods that I tweaked up for the kids. And when Lisa's iPod is plugged in, one of the kids' iPods also shows up in the source list, regardless of whether or not it's plugged in. And you can go in and edit what playlists are available and everything. It's great. I don't know that there's an answer there, but it's got to be possible. I think it's just, you know, there's some setting buried. So somebody, please, go to
or,
this, find
know,
it.
When they introduce iTunes 8, at Mac, or I don't know. I know nothing. I don't know. Now, it may be too soon for a new version of iTunes.
Yeah, you never know. I don't know. So we had a geek challenge a couple of weeks back that's sort of been elusive, and then I believe we've got an answer here, but we're going to talk about the path. The geek challenge was this: if you have multiple users on one Mac, so like we were talking about before with the iPhoto sharing, if John and I each have accounts on the same Mac, if I'm logged into my account and I want to access files that are in John's documents folder, how do I do this? And we've been through a whole lot of stuff, and we're going to talk about a couple more things here, but you know, the easy answer was, well, try Apple file sharing, just go connect through. And as soon as you try it, it says bam, you can't talk to a file server that's running on the same machine, go away. And so then we talked about using the shared users folder, but again, that has that whole access control list issue that we talked about before. So we've got a couple of ideas, and two of them are the same, but they also Chris and John included predictions in their messages, so we'll let both of those go, and then we'll listen to what Tom has to say at the end. But let's start at the top here with James.
Hey, John and Dave, it's James once again. I think this is Mac Geek Gag Geek challenge number one from episode 82. You have a person discussing two user accounts, wanting to mount the other one as a remote share or something to that effect. You mentioned wanting to use the shared folder, but you're having problem with permissions, and you said, Dave, that you've had this problem in the past. Enter in everybody's favorite not used free application installed on their Mac, Automator. You could easily set up a folder action with the shared folder that all it does is watch this folder, and any file dropped on it, you could have Automator run a terminal command, which could be chmod, which is the change modifier, or basically the permissions, chmod space, I'm not 100% sure, I'm not sitting in front of my machine right now, but I believe it's 755 is general everybody permissions, if I'm remembering correctly from my old HTML uploading days. So, yeah, have it run an Automator action on a folder event on your shared folder that all it does is change the permissions, and that would make an easy, easy drop and go for any document that needs to go into shared that anybody can use. Personally, I've done this on three different file servers that I have set up and maintained. So this works. You just need to set it up, and it only takes maybe 4 or 5 minutes just to actually get it going. And once you do, you're good to go. Anybody can access anything in the shared folder as long as they really, really want to. If they don't want to, they ignore it anyway. So.
Yeah, and that'll work. It obviously requires some forethought, though, and that, I think, was the issue that the listener had. They said, look, you know, it was someone not computer literate or not overly computer literate. So to ask them to always remember to have this, you know, thing attached and go ahead and put the file here, I think his idea was, I want to get at what they have or what I guess it was his own thing, and he just wanted to be able to access it without having to muck with all this other stuff. Not an unreasonable request. I don't think so, John. Do you?
Well, I got to score points for this one because it was getting pretty geeky. But yeah, I'm with you. I think our criteria for the perfect solution is one that you don't have to really do too much extra. You can use the built-in facilities of OS X, I think, is going to be a criteria for the winner.
For the winner. But we've got, Chris and John, not you, of course, unless you changed your voice and not your name, which would have been weird. It both sent in options, but also Chris had some other things to talk about, and both included some predictions for Macworld Expo. So we'll let them both run. We'll talk about that, and then we'll get to the final solution here.
Hey, John, Dave, it's Chris from Wisconsin. Merry Christmas! I was just listening to your pre-holiday show. Had a couple things for you. Simple solutions for the email and the user account issues. The Geek Challenge. The Geek Challenge, I ran into the same problem. Simplest solution I have ever found and loved is just an external hard drive. No, it's an external piece of hardware, but it just works, and it's easy. You open up either account, your hard drive's there. Other issue with the mail, something you guys push a lot anyway. I know IMAP was what you guys kind of went over, but going with something like Gmail, and I know you guys push Gmail a lot. Just give a guy a Gmail account. I gave up on Apple's mail a while ago just because Gmail I can get on all three of my computers, so, and everything's right there.
Yeah.
And last, for predictions, I would say you'll probably see a bump in the iMac, and I would look forward to the ITV possibly being announced. I know they said the beginning, the middle of this coming year, but I wouldn't be surprised if they demonstrated it the last show. Coming out right now. Thanks, guys. Keep up the good work, and you guys have a good holiday season. Bye.
Hello, John and Dave. This is John Green calling from Hong Kong. It's 24th of December afternoon, getting ready for Christmas Eve. Just finished listening to your most recent podcast before the celebrations, and I'm interested to try and hit back on the MacGeek Challenge in regards to accessing and altering documents from a separate user's account on the Macintosh. A simple solution to that, of course, would be an external hard drive or a spare internal hard drive where you create that folder where those documents are covered. I often use this process for transferring data back and forth between two different users should they need to access such materials. You can do the same thing, of course, for sharing musical files back and forth between iTunes accounts, separate users, and you can use separate users, multiple separate users, for controlling multiple different iPods so that they can each have a different library and synchronization. What's going to come out next year? Well, let's hope that a 30-inch cinema display with a built-in eyesight comes out, and additional ports for linking television cables and so forth. An iPod phone is on everyone's wish list. And while I'm in Hong Kong, I'm hoping to get a really cheap flight to San Francisco. Chances aren't good, 30-70 against, but if I get there, a red double lounge invitation to the party would be just great.
Just let us know.
Keep up the good work. Looking forward to 2007 and your continued podcast. All the best, John Green, Hong Kong.
Thanks, John. All right, so we had basically the same suggestion with two different angles. We're using an external drive, and that's interesting, right? Because you can set an external drive or set the OS to ignore permissions on an external drive, right, John? And that would presumably do this, especially if you aliased your documents folder there or something like that. That would certainly be one way of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it would work. It requires some extra hardware and a little bit of extra setup as well.
Yeah, it's getting there.
But it's getting there, yeah. Now, in terms of the predictions, a speed bump on the iMac, that sounds reasonable, I guess. I mean, we just saw the iMac get bumped, but it was, could be. The ITV announced, I think we need to see more of the 802.11n in Macs before that can really be a reality, right?
Well, but, I hear it's
that's true.
Hidden, it's somewhat hidden.
Yeah, that's
right. Think the hardware has the capabilities, but I don't know if they've actually enabled the because I still think N is in draft or final draft. I don't know if it's been finalized.
I don't think it's in final draft even. I think it's way, way early. Yeah,
which you got to be careful because a lot of times, like this happened with 802.11g that did the 54 megabits, was people came out with pre-standard products that maybe worked among the same vendor, but didn't quite work with everybody's computer and stuff. So we'll hope to see that. I'd like to see, the 30-inch cinema display.
Sure.
That's pretty nice. I've been hearing about that with eyesight, and what would be nice, because now I'm part of the whole big wide world of HDTV, would be an HDMI connector.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think I've seen any things that could be considered computer monitors or classified as computer monitors with HDMI. I think DVI, subset of that.
That's
so,
right.
So having HDMI so you could carry both the digital audio and video. I'd like to see that.
Yeah. There you go. All right. Well, let's move on to Tom here and wrap this puppy up because I think he's got it.
Hey, Dave and John, this is Tom.
Are you hearing that weird as well, John?
That did sound weird, and I don't know if you want to wrap up the puppy. That could be bad.
I'm not sure what just happened to Tom there, and it's a shame because he's got the actual answer. So let's try this one last time.
Again.
Hey, Dave and John. This is Thomas from Crackle Poland.
No, it's not going to work. Okay, well, I will talk through it because Tom suggested suggested two things, but the one that worked was using the built-in Windows file sharing in OS 10, and he's absolutely right. Yeah, and the cool thing,
the Windows file sharing.
That's right. So
the
Apple file sharing. So you go into System Preferences, you click on Sharing, and then you click on Windows Sharing, which is the second thing from the list. And once you turn it on, it's actually really cool because let's say I want to access to further the analogy, I want to access files in your account on this local machine. I don't even have to log into your account to set this up. I can be logged into mine. I turn on Windows Sharing. I click on the Accounts button. And there, if I'm an administrator, I can go through and turn on Windows Sharing for whatever accounts I want. It can be my account. It could be your account. It could be both of them. Doesn't matter. And so I set that up. You're forced to re-enter passwords because of the way Samba, the agent that deals with Windows file sharing at OS X, handles passwords. But so you enter passwords in. And then you're good to go. You go back to the Finder, you go to the Go menu, choose connect to server. And here you type in SMB, so Santa Michael Bravo, colon, /// localhost / short username. So if you had called yourself John, I would type in John there. If you called yourself Jay Braun, of course, it'd be Jay Braun. Type that in, log in. The only trick when you're logging in is it will by default try and log you in with your current account. You don't want to do that. You want to log in as the other user's account. So you log in as the other user, and then it just mounts it like a volume. I've tried it on the machine that I'm using right now, which is a dual G4 running 10.4.8, and I believe 10.4.8, right? Let's make sure of that. Yep, 10.4.8. And it mounts just like a volume. You can read and write files. You have full permissions as though you were logged in as that user, because of course you are logged in as that user. And it is a totally seamless solution. You can even save a favorite for this server, so in your doc, so just one click and bam, it's up and running. You can save the password in your keychain. Totally good to go. Huh. Totally answers the question. And so kudos to Tom from Krakow. I don't know why your comment wouldn't play, but alas, that's technology for you. So
yeah, and that's odd, is that the Windows sharing capability of OS X allows this. Because I was rooting for, and actually, well, our criteria was you shouldn't have to get anything extra. Because I've used in the past something called Pure FTP, which is a freeware FTP server, which is very nice that'll let you do this, but it's something extra.
No, it won't. I mean, OS X has an FTP server, and Pure FTP is more configurable, more easily configurable than OS X's FTP server. It doesn't require using logins that are mapped to user accounts necessarily, right? But even still, the Finder support for FTP is the thing that sucks here.
Yes.
Right? Because the Finder can be an FTP client. You can go to the Go menu and choose connect to server and FTP // and yada yada, FTP's localhost, and log in, and you can get all that stuff and it's great. But you can't write. The Finder will not upload. It will only download via FTP. So it's like, thanks, guys. Yeah.
So really help. Almost FTP almost solves the problem. Yeah.
If you want to do FTP, actually use our favorite FTP program, Transmit, because that, though it doesn't fully integrate with the Finder, if you go in and tell it, look, anytime you download a .doc file, open that in Word, you can, and then if you do that and double click on it in Transmit and open up the doc file, when you save from Word, it actually will reroute back through Transmit and save up to the server. So it tries to make it as seamless as possible, though it doesn't integrate with the Finder yet, but who knows? Those guys at Panic Software, they know what they're doing.
Yeah. So Windows sharing, go figure.
Windows sharing. Yeah, that's the answer. So here we have this Mac problem, and that's that. So no geek challenge anymore on the books for this year. We've wrapped up the year. We're clean. We're good. we can move into the new year with no burdens on our shoulders, right? Is that how it goes? So I guess we'll do the show. We won't do the show Monday next week because it's New Year's Day. Is that right, John? We're not going to do it on New Year's Day.
I guess we can talk. I don't know what your plans are, but maybe nursing a little, hangover from the
festivities the night before. All right, well maybe we'll do the following night. Maybe we'll do Tuesday night, and then the following Friday we all head, or at least the following Friday I head to San Francisco. I think you head in on Saturday or Sunday, John, and then
Monday, I think.
Oh, you're heading in Monday. Oh, there you go. And then. There you go. It's Macworld Expo. You know, one thing I wanted to talk about. I know I talked about how we had that suitcase that went missing when we came back from our vacation. Well, as it turns out, a week ago yesterday, so a Monday week, we got a call from the Massachusetts State Police saying that they found our suitcase. Did I tell you this, John?
You told me the one call you got where they said we still haven't found it, which is kind of useless.
No, I got a call from the state police that said, look, we found your suitcase in the airport chapel, and clearly someone's gone through it. You know, they say that they'll go 6 or 8 months with no luggage theft, and then they'll have a rash of them, and then it'll go 6 or 8 months. And apparently what happens is people see black suitcases on the carousel. They take them off and instantly cut the tags so that there's, you know, no visual identification. That way, if somebody walks up to them and says, that's my suitcase, they can say, well, the tags fell off, it looked like mine, right? And so then they take it and whisk off to the chapel, where, of course, no one ever is, and loot through the suitcase very, very quickly, and then head out. So they take the obvious things. I think basically the rule of thumb was take anything that's not clothing, which meant, of course, that bottle of tequila that we'd bought, it was gone. As was a bag of cell phone and iPod chargers, which I can't imagine is really worth anything to a whole lot of people, but there you go. That and then a weird thing was like a folder full of some paperwork, which also had the kids' autograph books from the cruise, which kind of was a sad thing to lose. But yeah, and I don't get that. Again, I think it falls into the category of anything but luggage, because they also took a magnet that we had gotten on the cruise. The kids celebrated their birthday on the cruise, so we had a happy birthday magnet on the door that they had left us with, you know, with all the Disney characters, and they took that too, which again didn't make any sense. I mean, it has zero street value.
They got some stones doing that sort of thing in a chapel. I'm surprised they didn't get struck down right there.
Well, there you go. I think I'm pretty sure they got put on the naughty list this year, though. So,
yeah.
So that's that. So, no black suitcases if you're traveling to Macworld. That's the lesson to be learned here. And if you do have a black suitcase, buy a can of spray paint before you leave and paint that sucker up. Make sure it's yours. So.
Spray mine on it.
That's right. Yeah. I did see it.
Anything.
I did see one tag, of course, that would have been cut off by these guys, but I did see one tag in a catalog somewhere a couple months ago that said, chances are this bag is not yours. You know, it's like, all right, there you go.
Well, I wonder if like, they had the signs, you know, the people would put up saying no radio.
Yeah.
I wonder if you put a sign saying no valuables.
I doubt it. Yeah. I doubt it.
Just get a distinctive suitcase.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, the cops said 100% of the time when this happens, the suitcases are black. So there you go. That's it. We'll see you next. Hey, Happy New Year, John.
Hey, Happy New Year.
Thanks. Cashfly Hosting, of course, is where you've downloaded this show. The podcast marketplace includes the 6i Isolator earphones from Metamodic, the A5 desktop speakers from Audio Engine, and TeachMac from TeachMac.com. We're running a contest for tickets to Cirque du Mac, but you folks know to email me, and I might be able to even get you past the contest. So,
Dig us.
That's right. Dig the podcast. We'll put a link in the show notes.
I dig it.
I dig it, baby.
You dig it. What else do you do, Dave? Or what don't you do?
Oh, well, I try very hard to live by my rule, which is, of course, don't get caught.
Made up.